Welcome to Bibliosynensis.
Hi, everyone.
So today we actually have a wonderful guest, Luke Geiger.
Hello, hello, hello.
So, tell us a little bit about yourself, Luke.
Born and raised Pasadena, starting to become a sort of aspiring published author.
Yeah.
I think you're past the
aspiring point. I'm pretty sure, we're past the aspiring point for sure now. Educational background is mostly in theology and philosophy, so a lot of my, like, if you were to, I mean, read some of my stuff, then you can kind of see where that kind of plays in. But yeah, that's just kind of I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Right. So we invited Luke because not only does he listen to Bibliosynensis.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Luke actually works in the book industry in more ways than one. You work in, I guess, handling the back end of shipping books and that sort of thing in your day job.
Yes.
And, but we are working on his publishing through our nonprofit, right?
Azure Lorica, yes.
Yeah. So we're really excited about that. And being the theme of writing for the overall season two, we thought it would be kind of cool to see different perspectives from different stages of the writing lifestyle.
Beautiful.
Cool.
Yeah.
What are we having today?
Oh, okay. So, since we were doing the dark academia, I guess, way of expressing your writing.
Yes.
And that's the way you're pitching it, dark academia poetry.
Yes.
I figured that Chap Hop would be a very dark academia theme.
Chap Hop is like borderline Victorian, isn't it?
Well, Chap Hop was created for the Chap Hop, I guess, music genre.
Yeah, from Mr. B.
Mr. B and Professor Elemental are the leads in that, and we had that production with Professor Elemental. So thank you, Paul, by the way.
Yes. So basically that's Britain.
Yeah.
And now we have America's style, which is
dark academia. Yeah. And I mean, it just reminds me of cigar lounges and like dusty libraries and that sort of, I guess, aesthetic. It's a very old fashioned spin off of the English breakfast.
Okay.
So it has those classic notes of bergamot, and it has Earl Grey, the Earl Grey, but it also has an aged vanilla bean. Wow. And one of the top winning notes in it is actually Lapsang Souchong, which is a smoked tea in pine leaves.
Well then.
So
a very interesting mix of flavors there.
Yeah, and since it's still a little hot here in LA.
Oh, God.
Even though,
too much fire.
Which, by the way, by the time this airs, happy fall, everyone. The first day of autumn is this week.
Yeah.
So, happy fall as we blaze on.
I mean,
calls trailblazers.
Yes.
Exactly. I mean, like, we'll be drinking this and we'll just say, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, so I made an iced tea version, but I put some sea cream on the top, and I put them in mason jars. We'll put some pictures on the Instagram, but feel free to shake it up and give it a taste.
All right. Popped out. I'll go ahead and just take it off. Ooh, whoa.
That's a good sound.
That's good.
Satisfying. Oh my.
Wow. Yeah, so that's like a kind of like a take on your classic British milk tea right there.
Ooh, and it's iced.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's good. Like,
but, yeah.
It's like a California English breakfast.
Pretty much. I don't know. That sounded like a dark joke with the smokiness these days.
Oh. Yeah, it smells like wildfire.
There you go. Let us know, fellow listeners, if you'd like the recipe for this. I'd be totally down for sharing it.
Fantabulous. Seeing as we're going to continue with the writing lifestyle.
Yeah, that's the theme for today's episode. It's just the writing lifestyle, and I wanted to ask both of you, what's your writing lifestyle like, and what do you do to prepare for writing? I mean, Luke, this is kind of like a new thing for you. You've sort of molded yourself into making that time to be a writer. So, I mean, has it changed your life in any way?
I wouldn't say it's changed my life, like, in the sense of, like, I guess how a lot of people would define saying it's changed my life.
Oh, like emotionally.
Right. It's just more like, I guess certain habits have definitely changed. I carry a notebook and a pen with me everywhere. I have a pen on me constantly, and I actually don't feel comfortable leaving the house without my own personal pen.
Nice.
Now, so it's just like that, small little things like that, or just as far as like lifestyle changes go, that's one of the main things. Like, always carry like notebook, always have like the phone, like notes app, yes, like handy as well if something comes up, especially when I'm sitting at work at late at night in the evening and something happens to come up. I know I'm gonna forget it if I don't like immediately jot it down, so just pull out the phone notes, type it down, hit save, and just like, there you go, now it's saved. Because I know for sure I'll tell myself, I've done it too many times, I'll tell myself that I'm gonna remember it, but then it's gone by the time I have something to write with. So
yeah. Okay. I mean, what about you? I know Gene, by the way, is the religious writer between the two of us.
Yeah. Usually you consider me rude for it. Yeah. Because I would literally just pick up, a pen and paper out of nowhere, and I would write probably in between our conversation.
Yes.
I mean, like, we'd be talking about, like, finances and something, and all of a sudden something pops up, and I just find a napkin and just start writing poetry.
Yep.
And you just look at me, and you're like, are you kidding me? Are you serious? And I'm just like, no, this is just inspiration. And she's like, okay, well, how often is it going to happen? Because I want to have a relationship. that's basically me. I'm really sorry, guys. I mean, I really apologize for being your friend if this is going to be, like, a thing.
But are you,
though? But am I really?
Exactly.
Yeah, so you write everywhere, anywhere. I know you're more of the type on your phone when you're out, right?
Yeah, how does that work for you? I mean, it's very stressful, to be honest, to be writing on my phone. But if I have nothing else, I will use that.
Mm-hmm.
I would love the luxury to be able to actually write it down on a journal, just be able to, you know, concisely use my calligraphy to actually make, you know, these words just flow without any pause whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, cell phone is there. Cell phone is nice.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't recommend it. I really don't. Like, really. Like, it stresses me out sometimes. Like, I'm kind of, like, looking at the words, and I'm just, like, typing it up, and I'm like, did I really mean to say that? Or am I actually just, like, starting to just talk in my head and having a conversation, and, oh my god, did this actually go the wrong direction? It usually happens. Silly thing about me is that I'm able to finish a project very quickly. That's my style. But I throw it out the minute I'm done because I'm unsatisfied.
Right.
And I will do this constantly until I get it right, which mm-hmm. usually is never.
Okay. Okay.
But anyways, how about you, though? So, I'd like to challenge you now.
I guess compared to both of you, I'm the complete opposite. I actually schedule time. And I'm, like, super organized.
You monster.
And it drives Eugene crazy. But I use several programs. I actually use 750 Words. I don't know if any of you have used that. But it takes the Hemingway method of requiring you to write 3 pages a day.
Do you need to drink?
No. Well, if you count tea. If you count tea.
All right. You can get drunk.
Does that count?
That works. Whiskey not included.
Maybe. I don't know.
Right.
But yeah, I will write on 750 as much as I can. I usually use that to train, quote unquote, you know, when you're getting ready to ramp up for writing season. So I will use that, but I also use Scrivener.
Ooh, yes. 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 Scrivener's fun.
So like, I organize in Scrivener and I put all my like little notes because there's like a section right before a chapter where you can even like pocket links and like little random.
Yeah. I always like found that. Scrivener a lot more useful for the lazy writer. Like for
I'm offended.
No. Shots fired. Let's bring this. No, but like there are a lot of people out there that are on deadline. And, like, they have a lot of things to do, and there's a lot on their head, and they can't organize. And Scrivener is, like, amazing. It's like the Illustrator, you know, program for, like, writers.
Right. So, like, for example, like, one of the books I'm working on is actually an adaptation of our play, Nocturnal Notes, which is also a tea blend.
Yes.
Probably should have drank that, but...
Shucks.
I think we did last time.
Yeah.
But I'm taking the play and I'm turning it into a novel.
Okay.
So I have it broken into different scenes and acts. And then at the same time I add what other chapters should be in there. On Scrivener, I'm converting Nocturnal Notes from the play to the novel. And structuring the novel, I was able to... you know, like, break it into acts and scenes.
Yeah. Okay, that's perfect. Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, what? How does that tie into using Project 750?
So, what I will do is I'll make myself at least write 3 pages a day.
Yeah.
And I'll write it out on there. But also, once you hit 750 words, this is why I love this program, it gives you your stats. Like, how many words per minute you type, if you use third-person, first-person more often, what emotions, what are your keywords. So if you have too many of those same repetitive words, it'll tell you.
Yeah.
So, I love that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Boot camp for, I guess you could say, the novelist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you just constantly just train and train and train and repeat over and over again. And just try to set, like, different... almost like working out in the gym. We're setting different PRs with it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Duration.
But I noticed that the more I write through the years, the more I feel like it's less of this feeling or vibe, you know, that people think writing is. I'm sure you noticed that straight off the bat. It's not just this guy lowly in a corner on his typewriter, like Lemony Snicket in the opening scene of the first... you know, Series of Unfortunate Events thing, movie. But yeah, it's really like, it's kind of down and dirty. Like, you have to be in solace and you have to train for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's the reality of it. I don't know. How about you guys? I mean, you guys kind of make it look so romantic. Like, I'm sitting in the corner with my notebooks and my preferred pen.
I mean... I think a lot of us wish we could become Stephen King, you know, the monster that just types all day and actually just locks himself into a room and doesn't actually need inspiration to inspire him. He just writes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the man does not stop writing. Even Neil Gaiman got to actually see his office and he was disturbed. Like,
I love looking at his office. It actually brings me a little peace because I'm a little messy myself.
Dude, it looks like a law firm. It looks like a law firm. It's like file after file after file. It's like, there is nothing about it that feels homey and makes you want to actually, like, get in a cozy position.
So, do you remember this office we're sitting in right now before you moved in?
Yeah.
It looked like that.
You think?
It was pretty messy. I had so many papers in here, but then I digitized everything, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. What about
That's
you?
I was going to just go off on that. It's just like, in a world of, like, I guess you can say writing, we all want to be Stephen King's, but we're all actually George R. R. Martin's. We don't finish anything.
Oh, my God.
But I mean, like, feeling-wise, I mean, especially in poetry, obviously, they at least from my experience, it's very much like everyone kind of ever emphasizes the feeling. It's just like, okay, you got to capture that feeling and then, like, immediately write it down. It's almost like the golden snitch where you have to, like, catch that feeling and then, like, hold on to it. And that's, like, that's your ticket, you know? That's your... That's going to be the piece, or like that's going to be the emotion that you want to evoke. But I feel like a lot of it fluctuates, at least for me personally. It just kind of, I'll obviously have this emotion that I want to convey, but it's not going to be just the singular like aspect of that emotion. It takes obviously like through editing and, you know, kind of like continuous drafting, it's going to mold and shape itself into something that may end up a little bit different than what the original, like,
right.
I guess you could say there's the raw emotion that or feeling that you have first, and then you kind of refine it and smoothen it out, and then it's more like, oh, here's something that's kind of not, it's not really the same, but it's still that little rough edge like unrefinedness is still kind of there. Like,
so
makes sense.
Oh, go ahead.
No, yeah. I was about to say that's really interesting because I just realized I'm the only novelist in the group.
Oh, curse you.
But no, you two are both poets.
Me. Yeah.
So, I mean, I wonder if that's what makes it different.
Well,
where poetry, you're capturing the essence of an emotion, whereas I guess for a novelist, you're thinking more like a marathon. You're thinking of the whole overall thing.
Right.
So it's a lot more planning.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. I mean, okay. Currently, I'm also editing another book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a novel. And the thing is, the guy has practically two voices for his writing. He wants to mix it up with, you know, British medieval style with modern American, and it just does not jive.
Mm-hmm.
It's mainly due to the fact that it's like he loves to write, but he has never had the discipline to actually, I guess, solidify what is considered a marketable book.
Because, mm-hmm.
you know, the industry loves to put everything in genre and just say, like, oh, this is a children's book, this is an adult's book. And you know, that's how we're going to sell it. You can't mix it up with comedy, drama, and somewhat murder, and, oh, by the way, time traveling, and, yeah, this guy is, you know, a certain ethnicity, and that's supposed to make sense.
I mean, I just read As You Wish.
Yeah.
I think I talked about that last episode, but they were talking about how that was so hard to market because it was a little bit of everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, maybe in the book world, it's the same thing.
It is.
Yeah.
It sadly is. I mean, if anything, that's why a lot of publishers, like, loved when young adult became a genre, like an official genre. And they were defending it to like, the bitterest end because everyone gave it so much slack.
I noticed, maybe, Luke, you can tell me, but I noticed, yes, there is young adult, but there's also just teen now. Right?
Yeah, I mean, especially, well, at my day job, we have at least, like, the kids, I guess you could say the kids section
department, yeah.
Have, like, they oversee, like, young adult, but there's also middle grade.
Mm-hmm.
It's categorized as middle grade, so there's some things that are kind of this weird, kind of like how there was that limbo of, like, there's a kid's book, and then there's a, you know, adult book, and there's these random, like, books that are too mature for, like, a child,
yeah.
but are not as, I guess you could say, either whatever, lengthy or, quote-unquote, mature for maybe, like, an adult. I guess you could consider.
Right.
Like
the biggest issue is there sex?
Yeah.
You know? And then, if it does not, does it deal with hormones? And then, does it have really bad language? Like, I wish it was the other way around, but, you know, that happens. You know? I mean, that's the difference between a children's fantasy as opposed to fantasy. Like, you will actually have some sort of, like, weird nude scene at some King Arthur books that will actually be in the adult section, but the other King Arthur books will be put in the children's section. it doesn't matter who the author may be. I mean, we reviewed Roald Dahl. and his escapades there. So, yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to tell you that I do struggle with that, I guess, lengthiness in the structure of a novel.
Mm-hmm.
Not as a writer, but as an editor. Because the voice, as a novelist, has to be continuous.
Yeah, because for me, I have to plan my writing, I don't want to say a year in advance, but I have to write in seasons.
Right.
Like, when I know it's a slow tea season, or a slow season for my day job, which is teaching, I will use that time to do writing, and I plan for it. It's almost like planning a vacation.
Exactly. Exactly.
So.
And editing poetry in itself is usually, like, non-existent. But I will actually have to say, I do actually urge other poets out there that if you start writing with punctuations, like periods and commas and such, in your, you know, in your, I guess, poem, stick with that. You know, don't go right ahead and start removing punctuations, like, in certain parts of the stanzas and feeling like you're artistic. It loses the pace of your poem. And the whole point of a poet writing is to literally immerse the person in your footsteps, you know? And if you lose, you know, I guess your structure midway, then you're going to lose the pace. You're going to have your reader lose you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think since we were on this, like, little train, and I was saying you guys look super scenic with your journals, let's talk about some other myths.
Oh,
I think would be super fun. How about the writing desk? Let's talk about that.
So dark academia right there.
I mean, let's talk about it. I mean, is there that languid typewriter and a candle in the distance? Or is it just this, like, perfectly structured, you get a scenic view sort of thing?
Okay, for me, it's really awkward, but I need to write against a wall. I can't have, you know, like, a visual in front of me. It actually influences me to, I guess, edit or write in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little ADHD of me, to be honest. But I love having, like, some background noise. Even if it's white noise or people, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Starbucks is amazing. But you'll never catch me at a window. Window just makes me relax, and I feel like writing is more like you've mentioned it, a workout. It really feels like a workout. I have to, damage my muscles, tear it apart for it to actually heal and actually grow.
Mm-hmm. What about you?
I mean, my desk at home used to be like my quote-unquote work desk, but I found it hard because that's also where it's where a lot of my electronic devices are, like my video games. So I kind of like tried to separate that desk at home with my writing. So a lot of times I actually tend to draft or write more without a desk, like outside. Whether it's on a break at work. I think it's just like a change of scenery because I'm so used to that same environment of just like, oh, this is my room, this is my desk, oh, there's my TV or whatever.
Right.
I just kind of, there's something different that I'm looking at or I'm hearing or I'm seeing that kind of stimulates. And like, again, Starbucks is when you used to be able to go inside and sit down.
Right.
Oh, yes, COVID times.
Yay. Right. Like, Starbucks was basically my go-to. But I also wouldn't go next to the window seat because I tend to daydream when I sit by the window.
Yes.
I tend to sit away from the window, and maybe there's actually a Starbucks over in Hastings Ranch where they used to have this long table where you have seats where it's facing the back window entrance. I would sit there with my back facing the window, so I wouldn't look forward and daydream out the window. I would actually have nothing more than other people sitting in front of me, which will then help me focus on what I'm doing at that mm-hmm. moment. So, because then if I look up, then all I see is just a random stranger, and that's awkward. So it kind of forces me to, like, okay, you know, do your work, sit here, write.
That reminds me of this one place. I mean, they used to be in Romans, but they also had, like, a La Cañada section. It was Zelly's.
Zelly's, yeah.
But we would go to the one that was separate from the bookstore, like its own thing. And they had this little tiny room, but it was like separated by a curtain.
Yes.
And we would deliberately fight for that space.
I think everyone did. We like fought like, you know, crazy soccer moms. We fought like old seniors. I mean, I felt like we were rude sometimes, but then I thought they were rude, and then all of a sudden, like, we'd all be looking awkwardly, like, do you even live here?
Like, weird standoff for the curtained-off area.
Yeah, exactly. Like, excuse me, I pay rent.
Mm-hmm. It's like, which is every introvert's dream, is just to have this curtained-off area.
Oh, yeah, God, but I noticed that in, like, a lot of Asian cafes, too. They have those little rental spaces.
Yes, in downtown LA.
Yeah, but just in general, like, I think even in Asia, you can rent out little tiny conference rooms.
Yeah, there's also, there's this, I went to school in Fresno, there's this, I believe this little coffee / tea shop, I forgot its name, in one of these sort of downtown districts in Fresno. And they actually have this little Asian seating area with the tatami mats. Ooh. Where you can sit on the tatami floor with cushions. And it was really, like, I used to have, like, what do you call it? Used to be in a band, so band meetings up on that little tatami area. And it was super, like, chill and calming. Oh, it's just like, nice. Oh, this is really nice, you know? And it's closed off from everywhere else, too. Like, everyone else had, like, the regular seats. Oh, it's Teasers.
Teasers?
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. Okay.
Like, I always imagine actually sitting on a tatami area, like, I guess, numbing to the legs. Like, do you ever get that? Like,
surprisingly comfortable.
Really?
Surprisingly comfortable. I mean, obviously you have a cushion, but, like, you know, this isn't like a tea ceremony where you gotta, like, sit down. It was super formal, and if you move, like, it's considered, quote-unquote, disrespectful. No, this is, like, just a cafe, and you can, like, adjust, and you can kind of lean against the wall. It was super nice. Super nice. It's like the one thing I miss from that.
Okay.
Well, what about you? Like, do you actually feel comfortable, like, in front of a wall or around people or, like, you know, the tatami areas?
So the noisier cafes, the better for me. Ooh. White noise. I can be anywhere, really. One pet peeve I do have, because I have a bigger posteria, I guess.
Yes.
Is it's better damn well have comfy seats.
Mm.
Yeah. Yes. I think that's a big pet peeve of mine, because I think when you're writing, especially like in novel writing, you go for hours at a time. It has to feel like a nest.
It's a journey.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, I know that when I do really long hauls, I'll, like, go out of my way to sit on the couch and find ways to make it comfortable. Mm. So I do a lot of writing on there. I mean, even the chair I'm sitting in right now has, like, a giant cushion on it. But that's, like, a number one big pet peeve of mine. And I just make sure that the Wi-Fi's off. Mm. And I write with the Wi-Fi off, because I will get distracted.
That's so awkward. Because for me, I need the Wi-Fi to be on, because I will, like, misspell, like, the most obvious words, get into alliterations that just do not actually, that are just not correct. Like, politically sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, like, try to actually describe, you know, somebody of a different ethnic group, and mm-hmm. hoping that you don't sound, you know, inappropriate. And mm-hmm. I need to check on that.
Well, before we leave this myth buster, how do you think that your writing habits or just the writing locations are going to change during COVID? Because cafes are obviously not really a thing.
I feel right like now. I'm going to have to go back to, like, the way I used to write in high school. You know, like, yes, I went to a private school, but going back home was kind of ghetto, so I'd have to just, like, find a spot that's just quiet and no one's going to bother me. Like, please, don't hurt me. I have really nice Nikes. Wow. It feels like that now. I don't know where to sit.
Well, I mean, what about you, Luke?
I mean, I feel, it's so hard, especially, because there was a point where I relied on, like, going to Starbucks and, like, just to, like, hash out. That's where I felt, like, the most productive.
Mm-hmm.
Or even, like, in school, the coffee shop was, like, my place. But now, I think, like, how it's changed is I think this is, a learning moment where I have to kind of force myself to write in environments that I may not necessarily be 100% comfortable in. I kind of have to make my own comfort, or I have to, like, mm-hmm. force myself to, like, okay, this is how it is. You know, I can't change the world. I can't go out and, you know, force them to open up for me or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not cool. That's not right. So I think, like, maybe, like, at home, just create a little like nook space or something. Mm-hmm. Probably that's what I'll have to do. I probably will just have to adapt, since I was so, I think I would consider myself over reliant on the whole, like, coffee shop cafe mm-hmm. aesthetic thing. So I think this will kind of see, it's a challenge, but I think it's a good thing just to kind of make myself forced to adapt.
Okay.
In a post-COVID world of writing.
So going back to the high school idea,
yes.
But for me, it would be going back to my college years. I remember when I bought my car and I had to justify the expense of my car by saying, I'm going to save so much money not going places, and, like, I can go places, but free places. So I spent a lot of time driving to parks, but because of that, I learned how to write in parks. I even had, like, my little portable kettle set up and everything in the back trunk of my car.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming I'll probably be doing a lot of that. And thankfully, we live in California where, I mean, we don't really have four seasons. So our fall is just a very...
nice spring.
We call it the second spring here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm probably just going to be loading in scarves and sitting at parks and writing again.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's an aesthetic in and of itself.
Yeah, there you go.
There have been occasions where I've actually written in the car and I'm just trying to actually get the work done without Wi-Fi. But, you know, being in my car, it's very nice and easy to actually go by McDonald's and steal some of their Wi-Fi.
Okay, McDonald's is an awesome place to write.
Yeah,
their surprisingly. $1 unsweetened tea just...
I wasn't thinking of that, but yes.
Extra ice, by the way, guys. I know it's not the greatest tea, but exactly. It'll get you through.
It's a guilty pleasure.
Yeah, it'll get you right through.
No, I mean, with how, like, Starbucks formulas are when they actually make espresso, sometimes McDonald's actually does the job, you know.
Yeah, yeah, I'm actually impressed at some of their coffee drinks.
Yeah,
yeah.
Please sponsor us, McDonald's.
Sponsor us, McCafe.
Yes, particularly McCafe.
Yes.
So, being in that, what are actually distractions for you? Like, what actually prevents you from writing?
My day, my emails.
Your emails?
Oh my goodness, my emails.
Okay.
Especially running a small business and being a consultant on the side and teaching. It's like from all sides.
Right.
You know.
Okay. But what about you?
This is stereotypical, like, millennial Gen Z problem. It's just my phone, social media. If anyone follows me on my, not my personal Instagram, but my writing Instagram, I post a lot of memes.
Oh, yes. Meme lords.
I post a lot of memes. I guess it sort of kind of became a meme account. It used to be, like, 3-1 writing, then memes, but now it's pretty much become 3-1 memes to writing. Mm-hmm. So I spend a lot of time on, like, social media, like Reddit, where I just take memes or I just look at memes. So that's a terrible, that's a bad habit. Trying to, you know, kind of turn the phone, you know, the whole trick of like turning the phone screen like face down towards the table so you're not seeing the notifications that come in, mm-hmm. or you're not seeing the physical screen. That's helped, but for sure that's kind of been sort of like, I guess, the biggest distraction. Or sometimes my mind will just wander and I will just... That's why I can't sit at windows. I work. It's my daydream. It's just like, oh, what about this? Or yeah. What about this? And it's just like, wait, no, I have to focus. So
yeah.
Those would be like my personal vices as far as writing goes.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, gentlemen, are you ready for the last myth I wanted to break?
There's one more.
What? Yes. Bring it. So, the last myth I'd like to talk about is the writer that stays up all night and is satisfied to stay into the wee hours of the night, chiseling away at his masterpiece.
Wow.
Is that a true fact? That we're all insomniacs and we're all just obsessed with writing and...
Maybe if you start as a writer, yeah. But a lot of writers, at least from what I've met, they don't actually write all night. So they stay up all night, but they don't write all night. And they don't finish. Usually it's just them actually just trying to jot as much as they can. And they're not done.
Well, what about you?
What about
From
me?
Your experience, do you stay up at night?
Yeah, I
writing?
Well, okay, the best hours for creativity is 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. for everybody. So it's like perfect, like, dopamine for you as a writer. I don't recommend it sometimes because some people just don't write well during mm-hmm. those hours. But yes, I have actually written all night before. Not my greatest masterpieces, but, you know, my exercise is usually, oh, let's write... you know, a cinquain and a sonnet, maybe a villanelle, and an attempt at a Dorsenbrough, you know, like that Tennessee style of poetry, all structured. Mm-hmm. But after a while, I need to actually do some free verse or maybe write a short story to actually continue writing, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, there's no reason why you can't keep writing. It's just you gotta stop doing the same thing over and over and over. And that's where the insanity is. That's why some people have actually compared novelists to serial killers, because they have the exact same habits.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Luke, what about you?
Not creatively. I've not stayed up like late creatively. I think the latest I'll stay up till is probably 1 if I'm going to be writing late.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in college, sure, like when you're typing an essay and it's due literally the next day, you're just like, oh dear God, you have no choice. But like if I had to choose it, I wouldn't purposely stay up till like, you know, dawn, up to like 4 a.m. just up like constantly writing, because I feel like I wouldn't have the cognitive ability to like look at what I'm writing and think like, yeah, that's good stuff right there. I can use that. Or really just, I don't think I can like look at the work that I'm writing and think like, you know what? That makes sense. Like I usually by night, I would kind of want to like wind down. Quarantine was a bit different. That's when mm-hmm. I was actually staying up like pretty late to write. But other than that, it was never really like a thing. I feel like everyone wants that. It's their dream to be staying up in the night, crickets in the distance, like the lo-fi hip hop girl you see on
yes.
YouTube.
Guilty.
Yes. They deserve an Emmy.
Is that the new thing we're gonna be voting for? Emmy for the lo-fi channel.
I love lo-fi, but and then you could add whatever, you know, station you wanna have.
Mm.
Those are great. Those are great. It's especially for jazz. Mm.
So for me, if I do have set deadlines, I will stay up. And I mean, procrastination is the beast, right?
Yes.
Yep.
So if I have to meet a certain amount of word count or get a certain chapter done in order to make the overall deadline for editing, I will kick myself in the pants and stay up late. And it is not fun. It will make me sick. But yeah. I have done it. In terms of that stereotypical crickets, we have coyotes in our area. But I like to listen to just general rainfall. And I put that on YouTube.
Yeah, that's actually pretty soothing.
Yeah.
Very soothing.
Especially in Southern California, where it rarely rains. Yeah. If not most, for 2 weeks straight, and yeah. That's it for the entire
year. Yeah,
I actually don't know too many people that know how to use an umbrella.
Yeah, I will agree.
Let alone drive in the rain.
Yeah. Yes, we panic at that.
So, I guess that's all the stereotyping.
Man.
But I do have an article, as we talked about before.
Oh my goodness.
And I thought it'd be interesting to talk about the points that they bring into it and see if you guys agree or disagree.
Cool. All right.
So this is by thebalancecareers.com, and it's under their category of author basics and your writing lifestyle. And the article is by Valerie Peterson, and it is called Essential Rules for Living Life as a Writer.
All right, Valerie, bring it on.
Cool. So, they say that she is a publishing expert, and she's listened to, read about, and polled many successful authors about their writing habits, and these are what she noticed. So, are you guys ready?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So one point is professional authors write a lot.
Yes.
If you want to be a writer, you need to develop disciplined writing habits, even if you have another day job.
That's exactly why I became a rude writer, which is, to be honest, because of what I've actually done before.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted to actually reach that level. And it's really hard, because it's like, when you start writing, you're like, I want to be a perfect writer. You know, you'll create several drafts and you swear it's not good enough until you get it done right. But nothing ever gets done if you keep being such a perfectionist. So I realized that if you actually create more,
mm-hmm.
and you reach that goal of, I don't know, 300 pages, then you can go right ahead and feel safer that you are a writer, because it's literally a lifestyle, not just a job. It's a career here.
Mm-hmm. Luke?
I mean,
In the field, right? Right,
very new in the field. I mean, I feel like, again, everyone wants to be a Stephen King in their field, where you set aside, like, I mean, that's literally his day job. It's mm-hmm. 8 hours a day. He just goes to his little office, and just writes away. And even then, it's just like, I personally have this thing of just like, to an extent, like, especially if it's like novel writing, at least I've tried my hand at, like, you know, just novels-ish, mm-hmm. like in college, just like just typing out fantasy where all my friends are the main characters and whatnot, where like 300 words of like good content is better than like 1500 or 300 pages. I'm sorry. 300 words is nothing. 300 pages of good content, like, you know, actually focused, like a focused narrative where everything is very detailed and streamlined, is better than, I don't know, like 1500 to 2000 pages of just, oh, well, here's the narrative, but then it branches off into like 18 different paths, and you have no idea what's going on until it comes back together, you know?
Sounds mm-hmm. like The Witcher. It's like side quest all the time.
Basically.
I'm expecting that franchise to actually do that to you.
Yeah, I mean, the first book's pretty good, or at least the quote-unquote prequel. I read it earlier this year. It wasn't bad, like, Yeah. But my God, the video game is a different beast.
Right. Well, I will say this. I don't feel like I get any breakthroughs in my novel writing in terms of creative until I write to the point where it hurts. And I mean, I noticed that my threshold differs depending on how long I've been training. Right. We were talking about workouts and training, but sometimes it'll be when you're just, you know, getting back into it, the 500 word count. I notice things get really crazy once I hit the 2,000 word count, and I get some really golden interaction with characters and description there. So you definitely have to keep writing, or else I don't think you hit that sweet spot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I remember that you actually wrote two different stories at one point.
Yes, I thought that was absolutely insane. I actually took that advice from when we went to the Gaiman lecture.
Yes.
And it helps to an extent.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, how far?
Well, one thing that really helped me was I have this one character in the paranormal thriller we're writing, and he's the villain. But he kind of started as a good guy, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get in his head. I just didn't want him to be this 2-day, like, ha 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 ha, you know, like, I'm bad. So I decided that I was going to write, like, a children's book style story of his origin story on the side to just kind of get into his head and, like, what he had to go through.
Right.
Because he's like, of the few, he's a half demon, half human, half demon. And he grew up living in this occult colony of other demons, basically.
Yeah.
But he's the only one that had, like, a human mom. So just growing up in, like, this elementary school for demons and, like, not being able to do certain things because it's against tradition and being isolated, so that was fun to write. Okay. Yeah. So it actually really helped.
Okay.
Yeah, it helped me get into his head and why he would be so pissed at the protagonist. Nice. So, yeah.
All right.
Next point.
Yes.
Healthy professional writers move around a lot.
Like what?
We're talking like nomadic lifestyle?
No, they're health advocates. They need their body to be healthy.
Huh. Okay. Okay.
I mean,
I could see that. I guess chemical-wise, like, a lot of people would want to tell you not to eat fat or have sugar.
Mm-hmm.
But you need those things, like, in increments still. So, as a writer, yes, you need to sit down all the time, but your body still needs to walk. It needs to run. It needs to breathe and pump blood. So that makes sense. That makes sense.
I mean, do you guys see yourself doing, like, an exercise routine during that point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like to blow off steam. Like,
yeah.
I mean, the whole thing of just, like, if I'm sitting there and I'm not, and I don't feel like I'm getting anywhere, then, and obviously, like, that stress starts to come in, then just to, like, I guess you said, clear the headspace, you know, where, or if it's, like, full of distractions, you know, just do, like, a physical activity where you can either mindlessly, I guess, like, lift weights or do some cardio, then it kind of gets the blood flowing and the oxygen flowing, and then once you're done, you kind of have this, like, refreshed aha moment.
I know one thing that's, like, complete therapy for me is, well, due to COVID, I don't know if it's open, but there's a local high school that has, like, a walking track, and it's great to go there, especially at night when it's dark, because you can just basically not necessarily scream your head off, but just talk really loud while you're walking
anonymously
and just, like, get ideas out. And yeah, people are on the track, but they, you know, they kind of just do their own thing and pass you. A lot of them have their headphones on, and That is so therapeutic. Another thing that we do that's, I guess, kind of weird is we collect firewood.
Yeah. Yeah. Fun thing.
Oh, yes. Fun. That is something we should not would without the fires have been. But
yeah, sorry. I know. But and you can't help it here around, like, you know, anywhere that's, like, near the foothills. Like, it freezes during the winter.
Yeah, a lot of people don't believe us, but we actually get a little snow where we are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, and the thing is, we have so many parks with, like, you know, old trees actually having their branches fall off, that it's just easy to pick it up.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, like, around, like, the, as it's, like, near the Hanson Dam area, mm-hmm. like, we actually still have axemen. Like, veterans actually take jobs to actually just chop wood.
Yeah, actually, and people give a lot of free wood in the area.
Yeah, it's surprising. But it's essential around here.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
So.
Yeah, so that's my little therapy. Should we move on to the next one?
Bring it.
Let's do it.
Okay. So sane writers ignore the critics, and especially the trolls.
Yes! I know this one! This happens so often! Critics actually tear your book apart because they want to get recognition. Like, they will kill you just to get it. They will create, like, propaganda, if possible, to do it. And they feel like they won't be taken seriously unless they actually have, you know, that no-no list. You know? Like, everyone can go right ahead and be like, oh, it was a wonderful piece. Oh, I loved it. Blah, blah, blah. But to stand out. Like, no. Shakespeare was a hack.
Oh, my goodness.
Suddenly people gasp, you know?
It kind of feels like in college when you're slowly exploring your style and you have to, like, bash what's popular, you know?
You're kind of just being, like, what do you call it, contrarian, just for the sake
of it. For the sake of it, so people think you're interesting.
And yeah, like you have a personality or something like that.
I mean, I'm sure you haven't had any critique yet, but, I mean,
it's gonna come.
I mean, definitely not yet, but, like, I feel like this is, I mean, especially in the age of, like, the internet, where, like, anonymity is a thing, and people can just leave whatever, like, they can say whatever they feel like saying.
Mm-hmm.
They can just hide behind a username. Like, it's definitely there, but I think the advice is pretty solid in the sense of just, like, you know, they don't know you, hopefully. They don't know, like, personally, they don't know you, they don't know who you are or what you've been through, so it's kind of like, and especially with, like, poetry, when a lot of it's just, like, you yourself are bleeding and you're using that as material.
Yes.
it's kind of like, who are they to kind of, like, say, well, it would have been better if you framed it this way, or it would have been better to if you just did not say that, whatever, you know?
Right.
Like, it's like, but you don't know that because that's not your experience. This is my experience. This is what I felt, and this is what I'm trying to
convey,
you know?
So, me and the press go way back.
Oh, no. Yeah.
So, I can definitely, from a perspective, give some points I know. For one, my first intern job was working in the press side of a theater for
Gary Marshall.
And, I mean, press will be press. I don't know how else to explain it. Like, it's kind of, they're in their own little clique, if that makes sense. So if you know one, it'll work in your favor.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say this without being completely rude, so I'm going to stop there. you should have saw Eugene. He was ready for it.
Like, spill some tea. Come
no,
on.
No, okay. I will spill some tea on the worst. And I'm going to just say it flat out because it was just ridiculous. The worst press I've ever dealt with was first year Ninja Con when we opened up.
Oh!
And I believe it was the Pasadena Star that came, and I felt... I almost feel sorry for her. Because I really, like my logic and reason for her piece, like, blows my mind. Okay, so it's this girl, and she interviews me, and I even give her my business card. And she interviews a bunch of other people. And then she writes this huge smear piece and, like, links us to... makes it sound like a bad thing, like, we're these exhibitionists in, like, the Gay Pride Festival.
I don't even understand why that's a bad
thing. But she made it sound, like, horrible. Like, we were out there, like, just, like, Woodstocking in the middle of downtown LA, like... doing crazy things, which was not the case. It was, like, totally organized, and then compared us to a gay pride march, which it wasn't.
I think what you're trying to say is they were trying to fetishize.
They were trying to fetishize basically cosplay and just mm-hmm. the anime community and that art community. But the thing that blows my mind about it is she had my business card. She was taking notes. And she couldn't even get my nonprofit's organization name right. She put in, like...
I don't know.
Like, the DJ's name. And then she just, like, basically got all her facts wrong. And I just remember the comment feed just... everyone's like, get it right. Get it right. Yeah. What the heck are you writing? It was like... it was almost like it was auto-generated, to be honest. It was that bad. But I always remember that when I think of the press, and it's really a shame that I think like that. But it was like, how did you mess that up? You were taking notes. We shook. You got my business card. Unless somehow she just, like, got into, like, some sort of accident and, like, burned everything or lost everything. I mean, it's beyond me.
No, she did what she was there for. That's the deal about, the press, is just that they are trained to be wolves.
Yeah, like, I can see that.
Yeah, they have to actually... make their conclusions before they ask you the questions mm-hmm. so that they could plug it in so that they could, for their piece to actually be correct in their perception.
But still, like, how could you mess obvious Google search facts? Because
that's probably what she needed you guys to react to. She needs people to read it and react to it and...
basically build
up the feed.
Traffic, yeah. I guess. That's, you know, so clicks weird.
And, like, I mean, it was most likely a reactionary piece to begin with.
Yeah.
So it's just like all what it kind of did was it was an online piece, I assume. Because I know,
yes. it
I
know is. At my
day job, we sell the Pasadena Star News physically.
Yeah.
So I would assume, like, it's just to garner, like, clicks and for people to feel pissed about it.
Yeah.
And to click on it, and then we'll read it, and then they'll leave a, what do you call it? An angry comment, the feedback saying like, oh, get your facts straight. You know, this isn't correct. Yeah, because
that's exactly what happened.
Right. And then the more engagement that it's going to have, the more it's going to drive. I'm assuming it's going to drive up, like, the algorithm search engine
exactly. where
it,
like,
puts it at the top. So if you search up, you know, say, you know, anime convention LA Pasadena Star News,
yeah.
it's going to bring up the one with the most engagement, the most clicks, and it's just going to be money in the pockets of, you know, her and whoever she works for.
Yeah, it's just, it was such a shame. Exactly. I will always remember, I mean, I guess she did her job.
Did her job, yeah.
I don't remember her name, but I do remember how ridiculous it was.
And she most definitely doesn't remember yours.
Yeah, clearly. Or the organization. Clearly. I mean, I'm impressed that she even got the name NinjaCon right. Yeah.
Exactly.
She didn't have, like, Shogun Con.
I know, right?
I wouldn't be surprised. Ugh. And, you know, it's just a shame because I've been doing this for almost a decade now. And I've really seen press... evolve. It's such a shame to see how it's deteriorated. And I don't think it had to. I mean, there was even a point where we had our own press team for our nonprofit to kind of endorse promoting artists and getting people's words out there, you know.
Exactly.
But it's just sad the way that things are now, I guess, but...
No, it's been like this, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, like, ever since, like, you know, the Communist Party became, like, such a big ordeal, like... Labeling everything has been nothing but a marketing ploy to make more money.
And smear pieces.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, a majority of, let's just say, the millennial generation don't even consider themselves under that title. We just say, oh, yeah, we were in our 20s. Everyone in their 20s have done those things. Okay? Mm-hmm. It's not just us. And if anything, that coining has just generated more money for the press. It's just there.
It reminds me of that piece. I think, did I bring that up in the previous episode when you sign up for National Novel Writing Month and you're a participant? Is every month you get a letter from a famous author. And I was fortunate to be at the time when Lemony Snicket wrote an article of motivation.
Right.
And he actually compared different writers to the novelists are gondola riders versus the jetpack riders.
Which were...
Were the press and that sort of thing. How it's fast to get there, but you can't savor it. You're rushing by. You're there. It does its purpose. Yeah. But for the gondola riders, it may be slow and arduous and tedious, but you get the scenic route. You experience everything.
Exactly.
And I will never forget that. So thank you, Mr. Handler, for that. Yeah. Shall we move on?
Please.
This was a heated subject.
Oh, yeah. It affects all of us. That's why.
Lifelong writers find their own writerly paths and their own voices.
I'm not there yet. I feel like I'm still starting on my path.
Hmm.
So if there's already like a road behind me that I've built with my resume, then I don't think it's actually complete. You know?
Mm-hmm. Luke, I mean, you're starting out. I mean, are you looking forward to that?
I mean, it's hard, especially just, you know, just starting out. Like, I've been writing for a few years now, I want to say, but never actually, like, I would only just publish blogs and stuff that I have, mm-hmm. so I wouldn't really say that, like, I ever started or, you know, just, I guess you could say, walking on that path.
Well, I mean, here's a good question. Do you notice in any of your favorite authors from beginning to end in terms of their writing career an evolution?
I mean, Dickens went from like happy hokey to, oh my god, was that a dead body? So there's that. Are you trying to say like we should try to compare ourselves?
No, like, but like, have you ever noticed that they end up finding their own specific voice later, like kind of like a wine, like it ages over time?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, I will always mention Gaiman. I just in every episode I always mention him. I just love the guy. But he even admits to himself that he didn't start writing or publishing his children's novels because he didn't believe he was a good writer. And he even admits of being a bad writer when he started. And you really can see that in the progression of his works. If anything, I felt like me becoming a reader through Gaiman just kind of helped me, like, understand what a good story... I mean, I gag sometimes whenever I, like, read Anne Rice, because, oh my gosh, why is she writing like this? But, you know, the stories actually get you. And mm-hmm. as
their careers progress, their voice really does solidify.
Yeah.
You know, and some of them, they get over themselves. They're like, you know what? If I'm an American writer, then I'm an American writer. Mm. Why am I trying to compete against, let's say, Pratchett? Let's say, God, well, who's a good one? Murakami.
Mm.
Okay? Like, you can't compete when, obviously, you're not them.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. You can't really, you should, I mean, you shouldn't compete with, especially with big names like
exactly
them, and especially when, I mean, it's good to like have those inspirations and to look at them as like, okay, like there's that style that I really like, you know, that I just really enjoy that style, and you can kind of like take on a little bit of that and sort of emulate. But even when you emulate, you're still finding your own, you're still refining your own voice through that. And at least for me, like, I guess one example, I don't know the, I guess you could say, publication years, but one of my favorite authors, C.S. Lewis, with, especially with his children's books, like the, you know, Chronicles of Narnia series, you can kind of tell, like, he wrote that completely out of order. Like, he didn't start with The Magician's Nephew and then ended with the, I think it was The Last Battle.
Yes.
If I remember correctly, The Magician's Nephew was written and finished last.
Yes.
As compared to everything else.
Which, ironically, is the beginning
It's the beginning of. But it's like, it's the most mature title in the series.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of tell that, like, from I don't remember like how exactly there's forums online that you can look up, and like there are people discussing like the different ways of reading the Chronicles of Narnia. There's 1 through 7, and then the way reading it in the order that he finished the book, so which would mean The Magician's Nephew would be last, or
yeah,
crazy stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I'm not that too far into that. Yeah. But like, you can completely tell with, especially within that series, where it's like, you can, the language and like the, I guess you could say the way he writes in The Magician's Nephew just differs greatly, even from the next book, you know, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Yeah.
Or with his other fiction work, the Space Trilogy as well. Much more, I can't remember if it's published after the Chronicles of Narnia, but it's definitely more mature in writing, mature in theme as well. And you can kind of see a sense of like that progression that I guess you could say authors or writers have, where it's just like, you kind of start out and it's a little bit, you know, like, oh, you want to be like your inspirations, or, you know, the people that you like or you like reading about. And then as you go on, that starts to, you start to break the mold a little bit, and then you start to find your own voice, your own method, and it start, you, the influences can still be seen, but it's less, I guess you could say, like,
obvious.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. It's definitely more subtle. It keeps people guessing.
That sounds a lot like H.P. Lovecraft. Like how, like the first few novels or the first few stories he actually writes, you could so tell that he just stole the writing style from this author and that author. And yes, like, his writing, like, you know, may have developed, but, you know, you have to be a diehard fan to actually defend the guy.
Yeah.
But he found his voice, you know, so, yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
And I'll be honest, Shadow Over Innsmouth is probably one of the best short stories I've ever read.
Nice. But, yeah, I mean, what about you? Like, the progression of which writer has actually intrigued you?
So, one that I really admire is, I brought him up in the past, but Frank Bedore.
Yes.
And I've had the honor of having him, again, at our convention, having talks with him. But, my goodness, he started as a producer in the film industry.
Yeah.
And then he moved. Yeah, and then he moved into writing, and it was such a pleasure to hear him talk about the writing process. And he really wrote it out of sheer inspiration, which is a good way to go. But just the amount of time and energy he put and trusted in his editor.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you can really see that, like super edited. Yeah. I guess it seems a little clean, like he doesn't want to touch past, you know, the cleanly procedure of writing, so to speak.
Yeah.
But as you go towards the ends of the book, you kind of start to feel that, like, immersive feeling.
Right.
And then the fact that he moved on to comic books is awesome. And now, I remember when I last talked to him, he was working on a musical.
Right.
And just that transcending, because I've kind of done that. I've done the playwriting, the essayist, and now, like, the novelist. So it's just cool to see that evolution in his career.
Right.
And I really admire that. And the fact that he's chasing that voice and, like, the need to tell that story.
Okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, as for hearing your voice, I have to agree, as a novelist, you kind of mimic your favorite authors to begin with. Yeah. And then you slowly start to realize what you're good at.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, wouldn't you guys agree?
I mean, yeah. I wouldn't recommend the you know, Harlequin book readers to actually, like, start as writers. But I love how a majority of those readers have actually attempted at writing like Jane Austen.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a lot of progression from those type of writers just because they're just everywhere. And I do appreciate it.
Yeah.
I do appreciate the effort.
And then I save the last point, the best point for last,
ooh,
which is good writers read a lot.
Yes! Yes, yeah. They do. Why are you writing in an industry that you do not read?
That's like not a make chef sense. That never eats.
Yes!
Yeah, it's
like, that just eats like microwave.
A musician that just never practices.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, a musician that doesn't listen to music. Like, why? Why would you do this? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I get it. Like, maybe perhaps that you're more of a children's writer, but a lot of those children's writers are also, like, horror fans.
Oh, yeah. You absolutely.
Know? You may not be reading, you may not be writing in the same genre as your reading list, but you are still a reader.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't write true crime. I don't. But I will read it. You mm-hmm. know? I will actually enjoy a murder mystery every now and then, and I will actually hate it if ever it becomes a whodunit situation instead of actually a psyche of how a serial killer is and how they grew up. But, you know, it's just the same story over and over, to be honest, sometimes, but that's why true crime is there. But as a writer, I don't write like that. I mean, sometimes I wish I were, you know? Like, those writers are amazing. Planning suspense, planning, you know, the ending and how to actually engage people. And, I mean, bravo. Bravo.
Right. Yeah. Luke, what about you?
I mean, for sure, I feel like the more, at least personally, the more I read certain books, the more when I, like, draft something, I can definitely see where the, I guess you could say, where that's coming from, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. I read a lot of, what do you call it? I used to read a lot of, what do you call it, fiction, but now having a degree in, you know, the humanities, I read a lot more nonfiction, a lot more stupidly academic books. So, but, like, if I spend some time reading, and then I'll have an idea, and I'll jot down the idea, or, you know, I'll draft something, I could kind of make a clear, like, I guess you could say the little red line dot on the wall, on the, what do you call it, conspiracy wall, like, this belonged here, this came from here.
Yeah.
I can make a direct line, it's like, okay, I see where that idea came from, you know, and it's also one of those things you can find through other people's written language, you can find your own language, you know. I find it's, again, hard for me to focus reading a lot these days, but definitely I found myself, the more that I read, the more that I, like, draft, the more that I have these ideas and I have more notes in my phone or in my notebook or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I know for me, I'm a documentary addict.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't realize that some of those, especially modern documentaries, will actually have links to books. So I've mentioned before The Trauma Cleaner, I found through a documentary. I've read, oh my goodness, what is the name of the book? It's Lucy Worsley's book on Jane Austen. It was really fascinating, just her life and her methods and becoming an author, authoress, I should say.
Yes.
But that sort of stuff just intrigues me, and I notice I draw towards those things when I'm in my writing mood.
Yeah.
And I think it just kind of ties in line with, like, the people watching and trying to develop characters. Like, instead of watching people, you're kind of reading through their lives, like memoirs or, you know, if there's a place that I need to get settled down, I'll try to pick a memoir that's located in that location and kind of see what their, you know, like, what they did on the daily or what they ate or how did they feel, what was the weather like.
Yeah. You mentioned that about the Julia Child books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Julia Child, and I'm guilty of reading Eat, Pray, Love because it takes place in Italy. With Venice and just the way that they approached food.
Right.
I mean, she kind of made it like a religious experience, but for me it was fascinating to hear, like, just the local cuisine. Like, in Rome, they would eat a lot of, like, ends, like pig snouts and, like, the brains and stuff. And those are delicacies in Rome versus, like, seafood off of the coastal areas.
Yeah.
So...
yeah, it's interesting because I think we mentioned before in past episodes, it's like one book is kind of a gateway to a whole other book or author.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I haven't read them yet, but me actually intrigued by, you know, Sinophilia, which is Chinese culture, and, you know, like their literature, which, by the way, their sci-fi is actually growing, so I recommend that you try some Chinese sci-fi.
Yes. I know The Three-Body Problem.
Yes! It's
very popular.
Exactly.
It's on my to-be-read list.
Nice.
Yeah, it's actually pretty good.
Really?
Yeah, it's really nice. Judge D. I kept preaching that it was actually written by a German ambassador that was stuck in China, all thanks to the war starting during his time. I think World War II or something. But I found out it was actually, yes, it was actually originally a Chinese literary piece. But then the Europeans thought, like, they couldn't relate to it. So the German ambassador wasn't the only writer that actually rewrote it. There's actually, like, French writers and, you know, English writers and, like, a whole bunch of, like, other countries that have actually attempted at rewriting this story, and it's intriguing because it feels like the whole, like, if there are any cinephiles here, it feels like the whole Akira Kurosawa and George Lucas communication of cultures, you know? Like, Akira Kurosawa loved Shakespeare, so he created Ron, which was King Lear, and then George Lucas took characters from his films that we now know as R2-D2 and C-3PO. Mm-hmm. And it's just a whole interesting balancing act of just wanting to connect.
Mm.
So, just food for thought, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So, how's everyone doing? Like, this whole conversation is like...
Well, I think it's, like, gone full circle, but it's
like
definitely...
I feel like we just went into the woods and we're still there. Like, we're really deep right
for
now.
Sure.
You know?
Normally this conversation, like, it's bibliosinensis. I guess a good way to end is asking what everyone is reading right now.
Right.
And then we'll just end the night, but thank you guys for the different perspectives.
Of course.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. It feels like you touched us in a different way now.
Oh, my. Yes. Okay.
Like, I've never held your hand like this before.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow.
Luke. So
what is everyone reading right now? Okay, I will start then. I am actually reading Howl's Moving Castle.
Oh, the British novel?
Yeah, and it is really interesting.
Okay.
And I love the way it's written.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah. And what about you?
Well, definitely reading multiple books.
Mm-hmm.
So current ones that I'm reading are it's a collection of essays called On Ideology by Louis Althusser, a French Marxist philosopher. Then The Wretched of the Earth by Frantz Fanon, who is a book about anti-colonialism and decolonization.
Mm-hmm.
And the processes that the colonized goes through. It's more of a psychology book. Has a wonderful, wonderful, is it a preface at the beginning? Mm-hmm. Written mm-hmm. by, I guess you could say, famous French philosophers, Jean-Paul Sartre.
Nice.
I'm also reading, for fun, not for any, just for the sake of torturing myself,
mm-hmm.
The Fountainhead by Ayn Rand.
Oh!
No, I have one of those too.
Just for the sake of, like, you know, all the meme pages I go to, like,
mm-hmm.
are a trash Ayn Rand and her quote unquote philosophy of thought and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Just so I thought, you know what? I might as well go through the trenches and crawl through the mud and see what it's all about, mm-hmm. see what everyone
mm-hmm.
is talking about. And I think, and I guess I could count as sort of like also another part is Dune.
Yeah.
The trailer just dropped, but it's
is
been...
Is that why everyone's been
that's
reading
why
it?
Everyone's, we actually, okay. We actually sold out of Dune
wow.
like last week, and then we just got in more at nice. My day job. But yeah, I've been reading Dune since the beginning of the year. I've kind of taken some breaks from it here and there, but it's kind of my, I guess you could say my, what do you call it? Let's turn off my brain-ish and read some really good sci-fi with some great themes to it, like ecological conservationist themes and whatnot. So, yeah, those are kind of what I've been reading right now.
Nice.
You're gonna hurt me. I haven't been reading books lately. Thanks to me actually diving into dark academia, I've literally been reading nothing but pleadings.
Pleadings?
Dude,
does
you know how many law students are in dark academia?
Oh boy.
But I love their humor. Anyways, but yeah, because California dropped like so many new laws this year.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I am just like, oh my god, what is happening? I mean, I'm just gonna say this. We have a standard over what we consider as pedophilia.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. And, yeah.
It's such a twisted loophole.
I know. And just, like, all these AB laws for, like, businesses and, like...
Right.
You know, just everything that's affecting us in COVID times right mm-hmm. now. It's, like, literally changing our politics.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
I am...
It's not even November yet.
I know! I know!
So, 2 months.
My goodness.
I mean, like, it was only last year that we had to actually copyright everything with the Library of Congress to actually validate anything that was intellectual property.
Jeez.
I mean, before, you could just, like, mail your manuscript to yourself with a U.S. seal, and that was enough. But, yeah, that's been my guilty pleasure lately, just reading court pleadings. I'm so sorry. There is nothing interesting
that's
apart
okay.
from that.
I mean, we're definitely in very interesting times, right?
Very.
Yes.
But, I mean, I feel like we shouldn't leave on that note.
Oh, no, not that note. That's a terrible note.
How did you guys like Chapok?
Okay, I love this tea. I've always loved this tea. You made this tea for me.
Yes, I did.
And it was all because, like, I think it was during the time when you still wanted me to explore tea with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you got me into Professor Elemental and especially Mr. B, which basically used 90s rap to actually explain history and have fun with it. I mean, I actually got into, you know, the Jeeves novels,
mm-hmm.
Thanks to them.
And you were really into the correspondence as well.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So, a lot of that underground British, you know, I guess, like, rap,
hip-hop,
mm-hmm. and pop, oh, is this going on there. And it is literally made to be drank with milk. And sugar.
It's a traditional brew, which yeah. is why I put the sea cream in it.
Yes.
What did you think?
I mean, it's definitely not a tea that I'm used to drinking. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm definitely like an Earl Grey fanboy where I will just drink nothing but Earl Grey.
No. Okay.
But like, it's definitely a very interesting taste, but really, really good. Like, I think the sea cream complements, I guess, because it complements it very well. And when when my wife had some, she mentioned it, how it kind of tasted
like a jerky. She said, yeah.
Like, I guess you could say smoked. What I got was like smoked bacon or something like that.
Like, yeah, a leathery, like, yeah.
This is. I can definitely see myself drinking this with actual smoked bacon.
Yes.
And with some, like, mm-hmm. maybe some Eggs Benedict or something like that.
Oh, how just about an English fry up?
Yes. There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
There
you go.
Yeah.
Especially after mm-hmm. Lent.
So, I will say, I cannot make my old fashions any other way now. Instead of bitters, I actually steep the bourbon in chat pop.
Really?
And I do a little orange honey syrup with it. And that's just my basic old fashioned is the way I prepare it.
Okay.
And I think, what did we call it for the elemental soiree? We gave it a name. I think this was the cup of brown.
It was a cup of brown?
We yeah. called mm-hmm. it the cup of brown after the famous tea song by Professor Elemental. And yeah, it is... phenomenal. Yeah. But I will take my old fashions with chat pop and nothing else now.
It's wonderful.
All right, wonderful. Everyone. Well, thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Hauntiers. If you'd like to purchase this tea, it is on teaspectral.com and you can find Luke's book on
AzureLorica.com.
Is it Azure Lorica? No dash?
No dash.
So
no
AzureLorica.com.
Yes.
No dash.
Great. So
Songs of Isolation will be released by October 25th, and pre-sale is available.
Great. And here's to your book and everything. Cheers, gentlemen.
Cheers.
Cheers.